The Baltimore Ravens did indeed respond on Thursday night, thumping the Pittsburgh Steelers 26-6. No one saw this one coming. If anything, it was going to be yet another close game between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Most people, including some idiots like me, thought that the Steelers would win because it seemed impossible that the Ravens on a short week would be able to pull together with all the issues between the distractions for the front office, the coaching staff, and you throw in the potential for dissension within the locker room on this question of whether or not Ray Rice was treated fairly or unfairly and everything that goes along with it. Of course, the Ravens trample the Pittsburgh Steelers to move to 1-1. And Joe Flacco throwing considerably fewer than 135 passes, which he threw in week one. Actually, it was only 62. Fewer than half of that this time around with 29, completed 21, 166 yards and two touchdowns. And just in time for me to bench Bernard Pierce in my fantasy team. And, you know, everyone always cares about someone else's fantasy team. Pierce had 96 yards rushing. So much for that running back by committee. As long as he doesn't fumble, it sounds like he's going to keep playing. And Owen Daniels made his five catches count. Two touchdowns, even though he only gained 28 yards. Great diversity on the offense, getting the ball around to a bunch of different receivers. Torrey Smith only had one catch. Steve Smith really stepping up. And the Pittsburgh Steelers just not getting anything done offensively. They had a great drive to start the game. Ultimately, it petered out. And I know folks were complaining about the flags for the illegal hits. Look, I know that from time to time we have to go back to square one and address this. It's more than just helmet-to-helmet hits on quarterbacks in the pocket, on defenseless receivers. Anytime that defensive player strikes the receiver or the quarterback with the helmet, that's a foul. And too many people hear helmet to helmet and they think it can only be helmet to helmet. But when Courtney Upshaw put his helmet into the chest of Ben Roethlisberger on that first drive, extending the Steelers' first drive of the game, that is a clear violation. People don't want to hear it. People don't want to agree with it. That's fine. You can disagree with the rule, but make sure you understand the rule. The rule is you cannot strike a defenseless player with the helmet anywhere, especially not in the helmet, but anywhere it is a foul. Now, Ray Rice may soon be calling foul as the NFL continues to stumble its way through the minefield or briar patch or whatever we want to call it in handling the Rice situation. This is the day Ray Rice should have been back. This is the day he should have been reinstated. And all week long, we've been led to believe that Ray Rice was suspended again, not for anything other than what he did in that elevator, which the NFL should have already known about. I thought the NFL would come out right in the wake of that decision to suspend Ray Rice and say he lied to us about what happened in that elevator. And they didn't say that. Roger Goodell tiptoed around the issue, talking about ambiguities and inconsistencies. GM Ozzie Newsome, who was in the room when Ray Rice met with Roger Goodell, said Ray Rice didn't lie. Well, now, apparently, the NFL reportedly has informed Ray Rice that he has been suspended again because the version of the events he gave was dramatically different from what ultimately was depicted in that video. I predict an aggressive attempt on behalf of Ray Rice. And look, this guy has rights. You may not like what he did. He has rights under the collective bargaining agreement, just like Aaron Hernandez did. And the NFLPA filed a grievance on his behalf. This looks and feels and smells like the NFL suspending Ray Rice again for the thing the NFL got wrong the first time around, at a minimum by not failing to properly investigate, and at worst, by now trying to concoct this idea that Ray Rice lied. Either way, I think the NFLPA needs to move and move quickly to file a grievance on behalf of Ray Rice. We have to set aside the fact that we don't like what Rice did, and we have to realize that there is a rule of law to be respected and a precedent to be set that can be used against players in the future. Just because this is a tough case with a bad set of facts, it doesn't mean that the NFL can do whatever it wants to do in violation of the terms of the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, if that's going to push these issues along, then a guy like Josh Gordon should have never been suspended in the first place, because we're going to take into account the bigger picture. We're going to look at the facts. We're going to show sympathy and empathy and every other other than apathy, which I know most of you are feeling about this now. But don't. Listen, these are important issues. I know we've got football to cover, and we're going to cover football. But until this Ray Rice case is done, we are going to keep pushing for the truth, and we are going to keep arguing on behalf of what we think is right. And that's the only thing I'm being guided by here, what I think is right. And that's, you know, sometimes not a popular thing to do. Sometimes you're saying things that people don't want to hear, but I'm going to keep speaking the truth because I think it's an important issue as it relates to the future of the league, because I don't know how many more incidents like this the NFL can ultimately survive. At some point, people are going to quit watching. At some point, people are going to keep buying tickets. At some point, people are going to just find other things to do on Sunday afternoons. This Sunday afternoon, guys like Wes Welker and Deion Jordan and Orlando Scandrick may have something to do. They may be playing football because the NFLPA, Board of Player Representatives, is scheduled to vote this afternoon. And I know the official announcement is that the players who are on that Board of Player Representatives are setting aside time to vote. They are going to vote. That's my understanding. That the proposal most recently made by the NFL, acceptable to NFLPA leadership, and will be tendered to the Board of Player Representatives for a vote. That could mean that if this goes through, and I think it will, players like Wes Welker, Orlando Scandrick, Deion Jordan, they will have their off-season PED violations arising from testing positive for stimulants moved over to the substance abuse policy, because it's all going to be retroacted to March 11. Now, there have been multiple reports, and it started with Jay Glazer last Sunday. Others have reported the same thing without giving Jay Glazer credit. Welcome to our world. But Josh Gordon will be suspended apparently 8 games under the new policy. And it sounds like the marijuana threshold won't be going up, because if the marijuana threshold goes up, then Josh Gordon wouldn't be suspended at all because he didn't violate the policy by registering 16 nanograms per milliliter in his most recent positive test. Josh Gordon would get 8 games because that's what this next violation would call for. You wouldn't go from a 4-game suspension. In Gordon's case, it was a 2-game suspension that put him into stage 3. Now for a violation in stage 3, it looks like it's going to be an 8-game suspension and then maybe a 1-year suspension down the line. So either way, Josh Gordon, if this goes through, and it looks like it will be playing football this year. And since I nabbed Josh Gordon on my fantasy team and I gave fair notice to everyone else out there, you should do the same thing. Looks like that's going to pay off at some point. And as always, I know that you care deeply about my pathetic fantasy football team. When we come back, we'll talk about a real football team that didn't look like a real football team on Sunday at home, losing miserably to Buffalo Bills. Chicago Bears will help christen the Field of Genes on Sunday night. John Mullen of CSN Chicago joining us to get us ready for that. And that it's been a week since we've answered your questions. That break ends. It's up to you. Boy, that's a bad song. Up to you to ask us questions and call us up to wrap the show. Before that, John Mullen, before that, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. On Sunday night, the Chicago Bears head to Santa Clara, not San Francisco or anywhere else in the Bay Area, but Santa Clara for the first game that counts at what I've been calling the Field of Genes for so long, I can't even remember what they're calling it. I think it's Levi's Stadium. I do remember what we call our next guy, John Moon Mullen of CSN Chicago, joining us now. And John, before we talk about the game on Sunday night, let's go back 5 days and figure out precisely what in the hell happened to the Bears at home against the Bills.
I think they're trying to figure it out a little bit. you know, and honestly, Mike, the issues are odd, because one thing the defense is a collection of guys who you don't expect to see play the way they did, and specifically getting out of gaps. You saw, I thought Lance Briggs played like a rookie. Lance Briggs thought he played like a rookie, but you know, you're not used to seeing Jared Allen being handled the way he was. You know, they go out and get Lamar Houston, and I think he had a total of 1 tackle. The safeties were kind of what they were, although I felt like I was watching a replay of a really bad movie, which happened to be the 2013 season. And here's Chris Conte put in the position of being a middle linebacker, because nobody touches a running back coming through the hole until he's 3 yards past the line, or, you know, running downhill and shoulder squared. And you know, Chris Conte is the fall guy, literally and figuratively.
And I mean, was it more, you know, you're talking about the defense, but the offense wasn't able to generate the kind of points that I thought the offense would. What went wrong there?
Well, you know, the turnovers are the cliche, but that's the reality. And when you're throwing passes to defensive tackles, and again, maybe Kyle Williams was the only guy open to Jay Cutler, but, you know, they were in scoring position and gave away situations. They didn't execute. You know, this is a team, they're playing against one of the top pass-rushing teams, and they have 51 dropbacks and 18 runs by the running backs. And it felt like Mark Trestman kind of lost his compass. You have injuries to receivers, and yet you're still going to, at one point, they're basically playing with the Smurfs. You know, they got a Michael Spurlock and a Josh Morgan and Santonio Holmes, who still didn't have a whole playbook, and they're still not loading up Matt Forte until the fourth quarter, and I won't say too late, but they could have dominated this game early. It just seemed a bad game philosophically by the coaches and executionally by the quarterback to begin with.
And moving forward, we've got some injury issues to worry about with the Chicago Bears. Let's start with the offensive line. You've got 40% of the starting offensive line now injured. Center Roberto Garza, guard Matt Slosson. What's the latest on whether or not we'll see them on Sunday night?
Pretty unlikely, Matt, Mike, because of the high ankle sprain. I mean, this is a 4 to 6 week injury. The loss at Garza at center was probably less of a problem just because Brian De La Puente was brought in here really ostensibly as to be his successor. At some point he played for Aaron Cromer in New Orleans. Nice to have a backup who was a one-time starter in front of Drew Brees. And they did not give up a sack. These guys both, Michael Ola, left guard, was basically in the CFL and couldn't even get on the field there because of citizenship rules or whatever it was. But they did not give up a sack in the second half. I don't think that's as big a problem as the injuries to the wide receiver group. So those two guys came in, played pretty well. I don't think Michael Ola is what Matt Slosson is, but they did not really miss a lot on the O-line, which certainly speaks well to what Phil Emery went out and got.
And we've got issues at the receiver position. Brandon Marshall left in return, hobbling around. He's got an ankle problem. Alshon Jeffrey has a hamstring problem. Give us the latest on both of those guys.
Well, and to throw one other one in is Josh Morgan. So yesterday they had practice with only one rostered wide receiver at practice, which is Santonio Holmes. The latest is Jeffrey with a hamstring hasn't practiced all week, and I think I'm sure he'll come down as doubtful, if not fully out, for this game. He couldn't even go back into the Buffalo game, whereas at least Marshall went back and tried with his ankle. And an ankle's not the same thing as a hamstring. But Josh Morgan left the game or came out of the game with a groin injury. Well, that's your number three receiver. And with those guys out, I mean, forget just the receiving situation. Morgan's a 220-pound guy. Jeffrey's a 220-pound receiver. Marshall, obviously, is the beast at 230. Well, what they're really losing potentially is not just the receiving, but the blocking that they really count on. They love to go nickel and then pound it. Well, Santonio Holmes is not Josh Morgan when it comes to blocking. So the ripple effect here may be more than just in the passing game.
What's your best guess? Are we going to see Marshall? We're going to see Jeffrey? We're going to see both? Or we're going to see neither on Sunday night?
I think just Marshall. I'd be very surprised if the hamstring is good enough, because that's one, you know, you play on it. Ankle's one thing, but if you play on a hamstring, you can add to the injury, and then you could really lose him. So I would be very surprised if he plays. He hasn't done anything in practice this week. Alshon Jeffrey, that is.
When we consider the issues on defense last week against the Bills, and now with the 49ers and Colin Kaepernick, that dual threat runner, passer, Frank Gore, you got to tackle him, got to wrap him up. What do the Bears need to do defensively to reverse the outcome of last week?
Well, stop being stupid. It's probably the first place to go, which I say is kind of an anomaly just because of the veterans that they had. They got out of gaps, and it was stressed this week by Jared Allen in particular. He said, you know, if you're assigned to play the dive, then you need to play the dive. And even if it doesn't look like it's going to be a dive, if you get out of your gap is when, you know, Kaepernick is going to cut back, he's going to keep the ball, and you're going to be embarrassed. You know, gap integrity is a cliche. It's kind of the old story, but they didn't do it, and, you know, Buffalo was the number, what I think, ran the ball more than anybody in the NFL last year, and they ran 33 times. The next team right after them last year was San Francisco. And obviously people watch game tape. I would be surprised if they don't run the ball 35 times. And the funny part here is, Mike, the kind of the reversal. Once upon a time with Ditka and Bill Walsh, the 49ers were the key eaters. Well, now they're the tough guys, and the Bears are the soft team. Like somebody said, they're soft as a grape. And it's sort of an interesting juxtaposition of what the one-time tough guys are now the push-arounds, and the one-time soft guys are the badasses.
The Bears were facing the possibility of life without Jay Cutler last season. The contract talks went slowly, and then out of the blue, new deal pays him $22.5 million for this year alone. At what point will the whispers turn into murmurs, turn into shouts that the Bears got this wrong, given how Cutler played on Sunday?
I think it happened about the third quarter, about the time he was hitting Kyle Williams in stride. Yeah, that's the thing. Chicago wants to love its Bears, but it also would like to at least like its quarterback. And I'm not sure that there will be a turning on. That's a great point to bring up. It'll get more hostile if Six doesn't play at least up to his financial seed here. The fan base in particular likes effort, and sometimes Cutler has gotten short shrift because he has played through some injuries. But they also won't take stupid plays. And the mistakes that were made last week, the interceptions were stupid throws. And that's something that they will turn on him about. Again, there's never been a question, at least in the team's mind, about his toughness, which plays well in Chicago. But the stupid plays, that will turn them on him.
Facing the 49ers, other side of the country, brand new stadium, primetime audience, what happens to the Bears?
I think everybody should come out. First of all, it's Levi's Stadium. Everybody should be in denim uniforms, don't you think? I mean, let's get a fashion statement going here. Mike, unless they can stop the run, they're going to be looking at 40 carries between Carlos Hyde. You know, Frank Gore doesn't like the read option that much, but he runs it pretty well, or he runs it. You know, he does what he's told. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing the Bears coming out of this with a win, just if nothing else, getting worn down by a very good offensive line, because their offensive line is better than the Bears' defensive line.
Yeah, and if they fall to 0-2, they could be looking up at 2-0 Lions, maybe 2-0 Vikings, and maybe 1-1 Packers after this weekend. NFC North not looking as weak as maybe had been predicted, and the Bears looking weaker than many had believed. John, before I let you go, what's the mood in the locker room, in the organization, about this whole Ray Rice, Roger Goodell thing? Because that has kind of taken over the NFL this week.
Yeah, it really has. And I think and there's enough of these guys, obviously, that are married or have daughters. And I think there's even off the microphone some real unhappiness. Like, this can't happen. If this were my teammate, I'd punch him out, one guy said. Don't quote me on that. But, it was interesting. Even Jay Cutler was asked about, if there's some more things that come out about the commissioner, do you lose respect for Roger Goodell? And he goes, oh, yeah. And then went on to give him more of an answer. So I think there's a not feeling of betrayed, but the other thing here is that there's a sense, and these guys resent it, that all football players are being portrayed as, well, you guys are just wild beasts and just can't turn it off. So in one respect, I feel like Ray Rice gave them all a black eye by just not being able to control himself, and now everybody's starting to suspect, well, these guys just play a violent sport, they're just violent people, and a lot of these guys are not, and they resent it.
Some of the owners have verbally supported Commissioner Roger Goodell. I think the Bears, via Chairman George McCaskey, the only ones who have issued a statement with strong support, unconditional support for the commissioner. What prompted that issuance of a statement on Thursday afternoon?
You know, I'm not sure, Mike, and I'm not sure about the language. In fact, specifically, George said he had faith in the commissioner. I don't know quite how to read that. It's like, well, we believe in you until you've given us reason not to believe. And in fact, I wasn't the only one that found kind of did a Cocker Spaniel head cock. Like, whoa, what are they coming out with this for? Because it's obviously there's something. Have we seen all the smoking guns, to use a Watergate phrase here? And I was a little surprising that they would be so unconditional up front. I mean, obviously they're a charter franchise and feel a responsibility to be on the side of the NFL. Not really clear why they felt they needed to come out with that strong a statement, unless if you don't make that kind of a statement, at least saying you have faith in the guy, not saying we totally support you, but we have faith. If you don't issue that, are you saying we don't have faith in you? So maybe there's a feeling we need to put something out.
Do you think somebody from the league office asked the Bears to do it?
Yeah, I would think that would not surprise me. Yes. In fact, I was surprised.
And then that makes John, that makes me wonder how many other teams have been asked and why the Bears are the only ones who did it.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. That's an interesting question, and I don't know whether – I don't know that Goodell is in a position to sit there asking calling in favors. Okay, I need your vote. I need your vote. I don't know that he's in a position to do that. But I think that maybe the league is trying to – I don't know if that's keep the shield, protect the brand or something of that sort. But I'm not sure an unconditional support or even faith in the commissioner is a way to do it.
A lot of people hiding behind that shield right now, hoping this thing dies down. In the interim, the good news for the NFL, there's football to be played, so we'll at least focus on something else over the weekend, and we'll see whether the Bears show up in their best denim on Sunday night. John, I recommend that you ensconce yourself in denim at Levi's Field, and we'll be talking to you again down the road.
Okay, Mike. Be well, buddy.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I think I said ensconce. Ensconce. The word is ensconce, by the way, not ensconce, although we could probably come up with a definition for a sconce if I thought about it long enough. We're going to sconce to break right now, and when we return, it's time to talk to you. But first, you have to pick up your telephone, and you have to give us a phone call at 888. What's the number? It's been so long. 237-5269. We will answer your questions on any topic except the ones we don't want to talk about. I'm just kidding. We'll answer your questions on any topic. And we'll also answer Twitter questions, which we've pre-screened. So when we come back, it's your floor. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Oh, it's PFT Planet time. It's been a long week. We've been talking about a lot of things other than football. We're going to open it up now. We're going to answer your questions, whether they're about football or about anything else. And the first one, it is a football question, and it comes from at Setting the Edge. Are the Ravens really back, or is the Steelers' offensive line just pathetic? Hashtag AFC North. It's still too early to know what's really going on here. We have a small sample size. I mean, the Steelers' defense looks horrible. Outscored 26-6 last night. Outscored 24-3 in the second half of the game against the Cleveland Browns to start the season. I thought the defense would be back this year. I thought the Steelers would be on their way to the postseason, and they very well may be. Look, it's much better to lose at home. Or wait a minute, let me try that again. It's much better to lose on the road against a division rival than to lose at home to a division rival. But still, they had an opportunity against a wounded Ravens team to go in and take that win, and they failed to do it. It looked like it was going to be close, and the Ravens just, it's one of those games where the Ravens just gradually smothered the Steelers. The Steelers couldn't get scores. The Ravens, more often than not, found a way to get into at least field goal range, and the next thing you know, the thing's over. It feels like it's over. The Steelers can't generate anything. I don't know if the offensive line's really the problem. I think the defense is the primary problem for the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. With a better defensive effort, far more than 6 points against the Ravens and far fewer than 26 scored by the home team. But hey, it's much better for the Ravens to be 1-1 after the first two games than to be 0-2 with two losses at home to division rivals. We will see where they go from here. Next up, let's go to Cameron in Chicago. You're on PFT Live. What's up, Cameron? Hello, Cameron. And Cameron. Cameron had a very brief question. Cameron, I don't know where to start in answering that question. Let's go to C. Crawl, one of our more loyal Twitter question askers. When Brady and Peyton retire in the next few years, how bad will the AFC look without its top two perennial contenders? Well, the reality is other perennial contenders will emerge. There will be a vacuum. When Brady's gone, when Peyton Manning is gone, you will have Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts year in and year out. Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals. Once you peel away Brady and Manning, that team maybe emerges from the proverbial morass. Alex Smith, only 30 years old. I know the Chiefs look rough right now, but maybe they will step into that void. And dare I say, Derek Carr and the Oakland Raiders? Hey, who knows what's going to happen with them? So the reality is, there's always going to be a team that goes to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. They may lose 43-8 every year when it's time to get to the Super Bowl, but there's always going to be a team. So you take away Brady, you take away Manning, someone else is going to fill that void. Maybe someone who's in college right now that we're not even thinking about. But the bottom line is that you've got a young crop of guys led by Andrew Luck ready to take over. And they may take over even before Brady and Manning end up retiring. Another question via the Twitter, at Jay Hovito. Why is Josh Gordon reportedly getting 8 games when his fail is no longer a fail? This is an intriguing point, and I touched on it a little bit earlier, but let's revisit this. If the NFL and the NFLPA agree to a new substance abuse policy that increases the limits of marijuana, then you would go back and you would apply that new rule to Josh Gordon from March 11 going forward. Now, it's possible that his positive test came before March 11. It's possible that even if you increase the limit to 150, which is now the Olympic standard, that Josh Gordon would have that 15 apply to him because maybe his test happened before March the 11th. Or maybe there won't be an increase at all. This 8-game comes from the idea that the penalties will be adjusted, that if you're in stage three, as Josh Gordon is, your next offense will be an 8-game suspension. That could result in the reinstatement of Darrell Washington, the Cardinals linebacker who is suspended for a full year. If his violation came after March 11, then maybe he gets back in, or maybe it encompasses him even if it's before March 11. It's going to be determined and applied player by player, case by case, once these new rules are in place. So Josh Gordon will be back. Maybe it'll be 8 games. Maybe it'll be right away that we'll see him. But one way or the other, he will be back. Let's go to Terrell in Chicago. You're on PFT Live.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I was just wanted to ask, what should us fantasy owners think about the situation with Zach Stacy in St. Louis?
Well, that's a great question, and it's particularly applicable to me because Zach Stacy's on my fantasy team. And if you don't have a quarterback, if you don't have a passing threat, good luck running the football. And I don't know that the Rams are completely committed to Zach Stacy, but Sean Hill's still injured. Austin Davis didn't look good against the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings are not a top five defense. Maybe they will be. Maybe that's the unknown footnote to that game. The Vikings are just going to go on a tear this year defensively. But I would be very concerned about relying on Zach Stacy until I see this situation shake out a little bit more. There you see the numbers, 11 carries for 48 yards. Now, you get away from the running game very quickly when you fall behind and you have to switch over to the pass, and you bring a guy off the bench who's never before thrown a pass in a regular season game. It was a bad situation for the Rams all around. So I wouldn't give up on Zach Stacy. If I had a better option, I would start that guy this week, which I think I've done, although I should have started Bernard Pierce in hindsight. Okay, Jeremy K. 717 has a question. Are you going to be surprised when Derek Carr lights up the Texans on Sunday? No, I'm not, because I predicted that the Raiders are going to win. That's one of the games on which MDS and I disagree. I think the Raiders win the game. I like what I've seen from Derek Carr. Derek Carr has a very quick release. It's a little unconventional. It's a little kind of between sidearm and over the top. It's almost like a slingshot, a quick slingshot. I mean, he gets rid of the ball quickly. He had some good throws against the Jets. Now, James Jones helped him out with a very memorable catch in a losing effort, but I'm not impressed with the Texans yet. They beat a very bad Washington team at home. I think Derek Carr can light up the team that once drafted his big brother David first overall and really stuck with him longer than he should as the starting quarterback. Maybe the Texans will be wishing that they had drafted little brother Derek by the time that game ends on Sunday afternoon. Another question via the Twitter, at Quinn Bammer. What's your take on Bridgewater Vikings and Teddy Bridgewater stepping in for Castle? Do you see him as this draft's Russell Wilson? Well, it's a lot of questions there. I think as long as Matt Castle is playing the way he played on Sunday, we're going to see Matt Castle. They're going to ride the hot hand. And one of my concerns, when you don't give the ball to Teddy Bridgewater, the guy you saw fit to trade back into the first round and take, when you don't give him the ball right away, you are running the risk that there will be an artificial improvement in Matt Castle driven by the offensive coordinator, Norv Turner, who dialed up a great game plan against supposedly the reincarnation of the fearsome foursome this past Sunday. Norv Turner is going to make Matt Castle look better than he is. That's going to keep Castle on the field maybe longer than he should be, which is going to keep Bridgewater on the bench longer than he should be. What if Castle takes the Vikings to the playoffs this year? He's got one more year left on his contract. Is Castle the starter in 2015 if he takes the team to the playoffs this year? How do you put him on the bench? How do you start the Bridgewater era? And then the question becomes, when will Teddy Bridgewater ever play for the Minnesota Vikings? Does he become Brock Osweiler because all of a sudden Matt Castle becomes the guy that he was back in 2008 when Tom Brady tore his ACL in week one? So good problem to have is still a problem. If Castle keeps playing the way he played last week, the Vikings have a problem. It may be a good problem, but it's still a problem. We've got one more tweet. Let's see if it's a problem for me. At Ross 07990963. Do you expect Wes Welker to play immediately if his suspension is overturned? Yes, if he's cleared to play as a result of that concussion he suffered in the preseason. Remember, 3 concussions in his last 10 games, and he was cleared to practice before this suspension emerged last week. If he's cleared to play, I think he will play. If they get this done today, you are going to see Wes Welker on Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs, just like you'll see Orlando Scandrick of the Cowboys against the Tennessee Titans. You'll most likely see Deion Jordan of the Dolphins against the Bills and anybody else who tested positive for amphetamines in the offseason. Amphetamines move under the substance abuse policy in the offseason. The only guy that we may not see is Josh Gordon, assuming that this new policy as applied to him continues to keep him out of the game. And we're out of time. We're not really out of time, but we're out of content. Same difference. We're done for the week. We'll be back on Monday. I will be in our studios in Stamford, Connecticut to get you up to date on everything that happened over the Sunday that was week two of the 2014 NFL regular season. We've got a full hour of PFT on NBCSN coming up tonight. Coach Kevin Gilbride in studio to help us get ready for that. I think Takeo Spike's on board as well. We'll get you updated on all the games, all the news of the day. Will we have a new drug policy by then? We'll find out by 5:30 or maybe even a little bit earlier, because you can check profootballtalk.com to see what the news is. F5 is the button for other types of computers. I think it's that little squiggly line R. Either way, check us out all afternoon on profootballtalk.com for the latest on the drug policy. Check us out all weekend long for all the latest on injuries and updates and everything else you would want to know about the National Football League. Thanks for joining us. See you back here, not here, but there on Monday.